Welcome to The Climate Fix. My name is Asim. On this show, we shine a spotlight on nonprofits, academics, corporations, startups, anyone working on a solution to the climate problem. In this episode, recorded on the 9th of April 2020, I spoke with Elliot Code, one of the co-founders of Offset Earth. Elliot has spent over 10 years leading engineering and product teams before setting up Offset Earth in 2019. Offset Earth gives you a simple way to fund the world's best climate crisis solutions and reforest the planet. I'm actually an Offset Earth subscriber. I've been using them since about January 2020 to offset my personal carbon impact. They plant trees and buy offsets on my behalf. You can even gift trees to people. In fact, if you wanted to gift me some trees, you can visit my profile page at offset.earth/jawache and click the gift tree button. Go ahead, it's okay, I don't mind waiting. Elliot is a wonderful, warm individual. We spoke at length about a number of topics, including the business of carbon offsetting and how they are managing to do it at a much reduced price, the historical challenges of offsetting and the future opportunities. We also spoke about trees and why they are specifically planting mangrove trees, as well as Elliot's background and the founding of Offset Earth. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast application. It really helps. On our website, theclimatefix.com, you'll find the show notes for this episode, including relevant links and information, and you can subscribe to our newsletter. Let's dive straight in. Hi, Elliot. What is the climate problem that you're solving?
Hi, Asim. Thanks for giving me the invite to be here. The problem we're solving is that it's a very personal problem. That's how things start off with a lot of projects. But it's a problem that a lot of people are feeling. There are roughly 4.5 billion people on this planet who know about man-made climate change and are very concerned about it. But when they look at their way of contributing, they think of recycling, or they think about their diet, like plant-based diet, flying less, all those sorts of things. But for a few people, or for a lot of people involved, they already were recycling a lot. They may have already switched to vegetarian. They might already not be flying much because they're not that wealthy enough to do it all the time. And they are finding themselves inching towards a climate catastrophe and looking at their contribution and going, is that all I've really been able to contribute? So we want to be able to supercharge the billions of people who fall in this kind of very concerned camp, to be able to get everyone to be able to contribute just on another level.
And that's amazing. I love how you mentioned that not everybody can afford to fly, and these are one of the things that's mentioned all the time, and it's kind of a very egalitarian approach that you've got here right now, which I love. So how is Offset Earth helping to solve this?
So it's the basic idea that actually money can be used for good. And there's examples of how you're normally minding your own carbon footprint, where you're lopping off a half a ton here, 0.1 of a ton here of your CO2 footprint. That's the slow grind that everyone should be doing on a long-term basis. We need to decarbonize and live the sustainable future, but we're not able to do it. Like, we're not able to make those changes fast enough. So what the opportunity is, and something that is totally underreported, is the idea that there are all these climate solutions out there that if we put money behind them, they will buy us a lot of time. And there's a lot of research that points to it could almost single-handedly get us out of this pickle. So with Offset Earth, it's the core concept that many individual small contributions will really add up. So what does that actually mean? So we're a subscription service. So like Netflix or Spotify, aspirationally, it's extremely easy to kind of get it set up and running. And depending on your kind of personality type, like we were saying, we're flying a lot versus not much at all, you offset your entire carbon footprint. So not just flying, but everything. And we take a very conservative look at your carbon footprint. So it includes a lot of things that others don't include. And then it's being offset by funding the world's best climate solutions. And our backbone is always planting some trees. We don't, you know, there are other projects types that we support, like renewable energy, energy efficiency projects, but our backbone is reforestation. And so 12 trees a month get planted in your virtual forest. And that is something that we really bring to life. And it's a real reason to keep on coming back and keep on chipping away at contributing to what is becoming quite a massive impact. I've been on my own platform for a year, and my goodness, there's genuinely hundreds of trees because of my £4.50 that I've been popping away each month. And then for businesses, we're solving a similar problem, but it's kind of on a bigger scale for businesses, where the only alternative for businesses, or the only real solution for businesses, is to become carbon neutral. You have to be certified. You have to bring in an independent auditor. And it's a long journey. And it's not something that many sized businesses can get hold of. It's a big investment. And so we wanted this kind of self-service sustainability program that is suitable for any business of any size. And so that's the Climate Positive Workforce, which is based on your employees. Their employees have their entire lives offset, includes all the business travel. And so there's a lot going for the business, but it's also a massive staff perk. So you join this business and you've got a gym membership, but also your entire life is offset by all these trees. So it's a real big deal. And it's like £4 a month per employee for the business side. So we've got 500 businesses on this program since October last year, and we've got like 7,000 climate positive individuals on the kind of individual subscription, families and pets included, climate positive pets too.
And that's amazing. And I think just to mention for the audience, I am actually an Offset Earth customer myself. I do love, I think you jumped over it, but it's the virtual forest, which I think is a really great idea. And I'm surprised at how motivated it makes me to continue my subscription. But it's a wall where I see every single tree that got planted on my behalf and all the work that you've done. And I even see the trees growing, which is a subtle psychological impact, which I'll just let you know right now, definitely works.
Yeah. And those individual trees, like we're, so if you tap on any of these individual trees, we borrowed a bit from the crypto world, where each tree is given like a little ID, and it all relates to projects and a timestamp that they were planted and geolocation. But we're eyeing up the kind of the next level of data that we have access to, and we're going to be able to kind of bring that impact even closer. That's a real big problem we're trying to fix, where a lot of our competitors or others who are, you know, when you get received donations, we want to not just have a downloadable PDF of kind of your evidence of what's happened, but to bring you closer to the impact you're making, you know, have like a photos and videos from the planting site and interviews with those who are planting the actual trees. And yeah, just kind of closing the gap on the actual impact there. So kind of less virtual and more real.
Yeah. And that's definitely how it feels. So you mentioned businesses, and that's interesting because I'm a retail customer of Offset Earth. I don't see the business side of your product. Talk to me about that. So if I'm a business and I want to become carbon neutral, I contact Offset Earth, and what do I tell you? What's that conversation look like?
Yeah, so carbon neutral is a bigger strategy. The kind of net zero strategy is something you try and define and work towards over a course of years. And it's a way of essentially looking at your own carbon footprint within the business and working out where the kind of the emissions are based. And you have to bring in someone external in to do the kind of the auditing and footprinting. It's a brilliant process, and it's improving. It used to be really difficult, but the tooling out there is getting better. And so the Climate Positive Workforce is the instant first few rungs on the ladder that gets impact happening today, rather than waiting for in 3 years when they've found out your entire supply chain and all sorts of things. It's like, no, impact starts today. And we can essentially loop in these kind of experts over the course, like, for those who want to go beyond the Climate Positive Workforce, then we can fold in these consultants to kind of certify you. So it's a bigger process. A lot of businesses initially love the idea, but aren't really following up on it. And it's something that we need to try and help along the way, really kind of, you know, that's a really good start. But we have to go a lot further with all our businesses and anyone involved. And so it's a bit of a journey, really. So the Climate Positive Workforce is a big deal. We're also, we now have this kind of Shopify app where we're now launched, where any of the 1 million Shopify apps can now add impact to any of their actual retail. So selling a t-shirt or whatever, a service, you can bake that in. And so there's lots of different areas where we're essentially planting a lot of trees. So through some, like recently we planted, so we've been going for about a year and we've planted a billion and a half trees. And soon we're, you know, I can see on the spreadsheets where it's not too far away that we'll be doing that every single month. And yeah, the milestones keep on ticking by. So it's a real fantastic opportunity, but it's finding all those different routes and channels of ways that we can work with business, like, I don't know, working with events and working with, I don't know, for the travel industry. You know, they've got a lot to kind of balance out with the kind of missions that they have. So there's lots of different areas that we're working with. And then also it's all about partnerships. So we're small, we're essentially just like a collaboration of people, and we're not deep pocketed. So we work with brands to kind of standing on the shoulders of their kind of social sway. So, you know, if we partner with them, then they can use their multi-million subscriber list to help get our names out there. And we're essentially planting a forest for them, but the impact kind of comes through us. And so that's a bit of our model as well.
I see. So you are helping businesses on the rung. I like the idea of that, on the rung to becoming carbon neutral. So they may just come to you initially. It helps them have a carbon impact. Perhaps they haven't completely measured all of their impact from their firm, but they know they'll have some, so they'll come to you. I've never actually really considered it. You are a stepping stone. You are a lead for them onto that journey of becoming fully carbon neutral, carbon negative, or net zero, however we want to classify it.
Yeah, all of the above, definitely.
All of the above, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, basically everyone, all businesses don't know their carbon footprints, like bar a few, bar the real minority. And so a lot of businesses know how many employees work within their organization. And so that's the thing that can get them over the line. And then one of the more unusual aspects of our business model is, how can you offset something that you can't precisely calculate? But that's been our kind of ethos all along, really. We're not going for precision and absolutism. We're going for simplicity and the opportunity, improving your ability to make action today. So we're not able to measure on a per employee basis, but the data that does really work for us is data from on a national level. So national level reporting of a carbon footprint is really well understood. And so we combine all that data. So if you're a country, you know, sign up in Singapore, you'll have a very specific carbon footprint. And we'll use the law of averages based on that data. And then what's interesting is that the carbon footprint from the carbon footprint emissions will only have been generated within, let's say, Singapore, but a lot of things are purchased that are imported. So, you know, imported from Turkey, imported from Greece, etc. And so we add a whole nother data set on top of that to include all the imported embedded emissions. And then we add another 20% just to be sure. And that gives us the kind of the most rigorous, biggest kind of carbon footprint. You know, there are a lot of others who think of a carbon footprint, especially in the UK, as being 6 tons of CO2. No, it really isn't anywhere near that. You know, when you bake in all the imported emissions, it becomes more than double that.
6 million tons per year, I think, is that's the average that's reported for UK. Yeah.
Yeah, 6 tons per individual.
Oh, 6 tons, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, 6 tons per individual, and that, in a way, that's how our, well, based on the UK, like how our UK, you know, how our government is purporting that our emissions are really coming down, that, you know, the emissions aren't happening in the UK anymore. You know, we're importing all our steel, importing a lot of embedded emissions. And so many of our competitors just look at this kind of individual view and think of a footprint being offset just like that. But what's really made in the UK anymore, and that's the same for a lot of countries, So it's important that we bring in all the data sets that we can, make it as rigorous as possible. But then that takes the burden off the individual, it takes the burden off the business to be able to make that impact. And it's the only self-service sustainability program that's actually out there that you could just get going today. And if you wanted to drop us next month, then you could, but you got all these trees in the ground all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I think that's my journey. I remember going into Offset Earth. As part of my work, I unfortunately travel quite a lot. And I remember calculating all of my emissions and then figuring out how many tons that was, then offsetting that many tons. And then I found Offset Earth and it was like, oh, just go on the mega plan. And I'm on the mega plan. And you've calculated the average amount for somebody like me. And you've added on top of that, as you say, how much you think we really are, or how off you think the actual averages are. You've kind of added a lot onto there to make it more realistic. And at the end of the day, I think it's, if not accurate, then I'm either paying a bit more than I really need to offset, but who cares? I don't particularly care that much.
Yeah, that's, you're a wonderful customer. That's the perfect mindset, exactly. Yeah, it's the absolutism. Like, it's difficult, and especially you're in the dev world, and that's my background too, is a lot of my old colleagues are going like, yeah, but I live on a boat and all sorts of things. Like, I shouldn't have to. It's like, the world's on fire, man. We just need all hands to the pump. Just freaking hand over just a coffee's worth of cash, you know, every week or every month.
And it's not that much money as well. That's the thing. I think I was surprised when I first started looking into offsetting and how cheap it was.
Yeah.
Really, I think we're pricing carbon at quite a low rate, really. And I'd love to discuss that with you a little bit more. But yeah, it's quite cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, page one of Google right now, up until we had launched. It was about five times the amount of the kind of cost price that it actually should be. So we sell all our carbon offsets as cost price plus 12.5%. And that is still four or five times cheaper than a lot of the guys out there. It's funny how, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, actual purpose-driven competitors out there. They really are. But the price just isn't reflected in that. And we don't really know where it's going wrong, but there's a big margin, or there's a big gap. So a lot of our businesses are sort of astonished that the price that we can access the carbon offsets at. And so some businesses aren't planting trees with us anymore. They just want to bulk buy masses of carbon offsets, and they would just go to like a normal carbon trade dealer, but they come to us instead because of just kind of this purpose. And our whole thing is just a volume game. We need to be able to see a lot of customers to make this worth it, or to be able to sustain itself. But the opportunity is massive, and so we can totally get there. And paradoxically, like, prioritizing impact over profit and transparency and authenticity, those things which should kind of push back a profitable business, I think paradoxically really helping us right now. It's been good. It's been helpful for us. And offsetting your entire footprint is damn cheap, and that's what kicked off the whole thing. It's like, Jesus, we know carbon offsets aren't an infallible system, and project quality has come up in the past, but let's say most of the projects deliver what they say they're going to deliver, then heck yes, it's worth backing.
So, and I think that's what's interesting, again, for the audience members, in Offset Earth, when I pay my subscription, you plant a number of trees, and I would like to dig into that a little bit, because I think there's some interesting stuff there about the types of trees that you plant and where you plant them. But that you also purchase offsets that are classified as gold standard, I believe, right? Offsets.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware. I had noticed, actually, they seemed to be quite cheap. So are you saying that they're cheaper because, are you cutting out the middleman? Are you choosing not to make as much profit? Why are they cheaper for you and more expensive for others?
Yes. So it is complicated. So with carbon offsets, as I kind of alluded to, had the world's rockiest history of anything ever with carbon offsets. So Gold Standard and a few others came around a few years ago to essentially solve the quality concern. So they really raised the bar of kind of the standards and the criteria and everything. So it's exemplary. And Gold Standard sell their carbon offsets, and we do cut out a few of the middlemen, and it's still an open marketplace. So when you with increasing demand, the prices will correlate with it. But it's fair to say that if we can run things in a very horizontally scalable, kind of autonomous way, like we are with our business, where there's no sales call, there's none of that's involved whatsoever, our ability to sell carbon offsets and then link those directly with the gold standard certificates that we get from their registry, no manual intervention at all, it means that we can almost run this as absolute cost price, essentially. We don't have that kind of profiteering aspect, which can triple or 10x, say, a carbon offset. Project selection is a big deal. So you can buy a ton of CO2 for maybe 50 pence on a ton, or like 50 cents on a ton.
Wow.
Yeah, or like $20-$50 on a ton. Like, it's a real extreme variation. And what we do is we combine those. We don't go that cheap. Often there's maybe a small concern at that real bottom end, but if they're certified by Gold Standard, that's what we go for. And so our due diligence concern is alleviated a bit. But we combine it with a more inexpensive carbon offset project, like just a massive wind turbine installation, where the economies of scale there are really favorable. So these sorts of projects don't need much external capital from the carbon offset market to get the go ahead. Whereas a lovely humanitarian project, which restores water wells in Africa that were installed by a charity that fall into disrepair, that this project repairs them, which means that these local communities aren't having to boil lots of dirty water sources, which means a whole lot less CO2 emissions and chopping down a lot less wood, etc. And these are at the higher end of the spectrum. So we always combine a mixture of like a blended portfolio, essentially, to keep that price down. But yeah, it's an interesting industry, and I think with aviation, when that kicks back off again, because we're in the middle of a lockdown with coronavirus, when that kicks back off again, all aviation is going to have to offset as mandatory. So that's going to have a lot more demand, but then supply will come back, and there's going to have this whole massive green economy of kind of more amazing standards of carbon offsets and more colorful climate solutions that are out there for us to get behind.
So that's interesting. So it sounds like part of it is you're just cutting out the middlemen, but also excitingly, because I'm an engineer as well, you've just automated the process, whereas perhaps a lot of other offsetting firms might have a lot more manual people and sales teams and things like that. You've automated it to the point where you even indicate just now you could even probably do it at cost, which is really good. And I love the way that you're doing a mixture of it. You're not just buying the cheapest offsets. You're making sure the money goes in a variety of places so they can hit all the different targets they have. The other thing that you do is you plant trees. I noticed you plant mangrove. Is it called mangrove trees?
Yeah.
Is there like a reason why you plant mangrove trees? I don't think I've ever seen a mangrove tree, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Not in this kind of northern hemisphere temperate climates that I live in, for sure. This is a very tropical thing, but around islands. So Indonesia and Madagascar and that kind of around those kind of latitudes, that these mangroves exist on the kind of the fringes of any islands or on the kind of the coastline. So this was a big part of the research and development before we actually launched the project. We wanted to have an exceptional, amazing reforestation partner to work with. Reforesting is tricky. You might have seen the headlines like 1 trillion trees can save the planet, and then a week later there'll be another headline saying no, 1 trillion trees can't save the planet. And then it's kind of boils down to, if you added a few more words to the headline, it should be 1 trillion trees could save the planet if we did it well. And it's that kind of the expertise and the geographies. Anyway, it's a big deal. It's a long story short, why mangrove trees? So in that kind of area of the world, they grow very quickly. So a tropical rainforest grows exceptionally quickly. It's about five times faster than our sort of trees in the UK. It's a tropical rainforest. But the mangroves, they grow four times faster than a tropical rainforest. They're exceptional little growers. And we were planting right now in Madagascar, which in the last 120 years has seen 90% deforestation. So Madagascar, there's a lot of room to plant a lot more mangrove trees, which is the upside of what we can do. We can really at scale reforest these mangroves, and they are an amazing ecological ally. The tropical fish, I think at least three quarters of all tropical fish, like everywhere, any tropical fish, rely on planting, that's like in nature, rely on laying their eggs in mangrove roots. Without these roots?
What?
Yeah, without these roots, they're unfortunately absolutely useless.
Because a mangrove tree, if I remember the pictures, it looks like it's growing out of water. Yeah. And it looks like I don't know how to describe it on a podcast, it's like a gnarly set of roots.
Yes, exactly, a gnarly set of roots, exactly. Yeah. You can see this exposed kind of nest, it's very gnarly. Maybe not the most beautiful, but you've got the serene kind of water and like the habitat, like below the surface is absolutely stunning. Just the kind of the aquatic kind of life that goes on there. So it's a really amazing project from both a climate and an ecological point of view to get behind. It's a community-led reforestation project. So there are lots of partners who can shoot trees into the ground using a drone, but there's an amazing opportunity to engage a community. And community engagement is the primary reason that they don't get just chopped down again. So once the community are engaged, then they've got a love for it. They fall in love with it. They also live off the land. They have the kind of local harvesting ability where there's some fruiting. There are economies that benefit from this. And yeah, so it's a big deal. And a lot of people who are being employed in the local area have never been had a single paid day's work ever. And so this sort of initiative is long term. It's like 30 to 100 year investment. It's a big deal in there. It's an amazing project, and that's all thanks to the partner Eden Reforestation. They've got a real long track record of doing it well, and it's a brilliant initiative to work with. And so we've planted enough mangrove trees now that we actually have our own bit of land. I say our own bit, but it's like 2,000 hectares, which is 6,000 acres. And you're only just getting started as well.
So have you bought that land, or how's that land work?
So we're essentially, it's designated to from Eden Reforestation, we've been able to designate it. It's in collaboration with the local governments there, designated for us to plant exclusively. And it means that Coca-Cola's trees aren't mixed into our trees, and you know our subscribers need to see our impact, and so it's our actual area. And so we were going to go visit it, it might be a little delayed at the moment, but we've just had some photos from the site, and it's so amazing to see in just a few months hundreds of thousands of little saplings that are now sprouting leaves, and they do grow darn quick, and it's been great to share it with everyone. And you just fall in love with these darn trees that we're planting at scale.
Seeing something grow from the land is quite a inspirational thing, I think. It's summertime right now in the UK, and we're actually starting to plant stuff in our garden. And it is just, the whole family gets around. Just seeing something grow is quite beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it. Love springtime. Yeah, and makes the world go round. And these kind of small-scale ways of getting involved have a big lasting effect. Like if you actually planted a tree in your garden, if you can, then you feel just so connected to it. And especially if you're doing it for the reason of ecological and climate point of view, and then that kind of sits with you. And then who knows what the next thing you ended up doing? Maybe it's like a volunteer tree planting day in like a local area, all sorts of things.
Oh, that's amazing. So moving on, I think the question I'd like to ask now is how does this scale? How do you get from where you are right now to the maximum potential impact of Offset Earth?
Yes, so the maximum potential impact is something we've been working on very, very recently. We just launched this collective action idea. It's when you're planting 12 trees a month, and it's hard to work out what that what role you're playing in the grand scheme of things. And we've just launched this kind of campaign page where we can really show how all these individual contributions really add up. To cut a long story short, in collaboration with this amazing research from this project called Project Drawdown, it's an amazing summary of the 80 odd established climate solutions that are out there, the capacities that are out there. So it's very easy to see that the solutions are out there. We just need to put money in their direction. And when you scale up something like this platform, you can very easily see the kind of the milestones that lead up to it. So it's amazing. Anyway, down the line, we could be looking at the 700 million people who are out there who have internet access, who have at least $10 disposable cash every month to get behind something like this. And it becomes 3/4 of the entire global greenhouse footprint. It's absolutely astonishing. So how do we get there? So we're a for-profit company. We know we need to be a profitable enterprise to attract lots of investment and to scale very quickly. But other than that, we are essentially a collaboration of everyone who can kind of join the cause. So we've got all sorts of people who are just joining our Slack who can put us in different places and partnerships. And like I was saying, with brand partnerships is a big opportunity to getting us out there very quickly. So it's a little of everything, but it's our time is genuinely now. We have to move exceedingly quickly, and so it could be some strange partnerships. Like there's this kind of really sustainable beer that is going over the there's this really sustainable beer that is totally over delivering and kind of the world of how to make something and deliver something sustainable. We're doing a lot of work with them, and it's just going to put us in lots of different new places that our kind of very techie background wasn't able to. So hopefully, like political, working with other projects. There's lots of very small early stage projects that need a little helping. So we're going to be doing this moonshot aspect of the subscription, where for a little extra, you can essentially get behind these very early stage projects that, for example, direct carbon capture, so sucking CO2 out of the air, but also other kind of really fantastic initiatives like Solar Sack, this amazing, just very cheap kind of water sack that you can give to nations that are in need of clean access to water. You just fill it full of dirty water, you leave it out in the sun, there's this crazy chemical treatment, and then 6 hours later, 99.9% of all kind of pathogens are kind of wiped out of this water. And it changes on a big scale for the communities involved there. But there's a whole lot less burning of kind of fuels to kind of, you know, essentially purify water. So backing these kind of very early stage projects is going to be a really big opportunity for us as well, and to kind of tap into something that we're going to rely on in terms of the future, because we're going to need these projects, but also just as another level of engagement, kind of almost like a bit of a Kickstarter for early stage projects.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I had no idea that the potential impact was 3/4 of all. So now I've gone on to the Collective Action website, and I will put this in the show notes as well. I love how you have just documented the journey along the way. This is what you need to achieve, or these are the milestones you need to achieve to get to that 3/4 of all global CO2 emissions. So what's the most significant risk to stop you from getting there? Is it something science, engineering, is it market, or is it something else? What's the risk?
It's engagement and it's trust. So carbon offset has had this terrible rocky history. It's improving. Is it going to improve fast enough? Carbon offsets, the reason why we're wedded to this is carbon offsets are the vehicle of converting money into quantifiable carbon reduction. So we're in bed with this. We need to be able to, we and the rest of those who are kind of selling climate solutions, needs to try and improve the picture, try and improve the kind of authenticity of these projects. And so that's going to be a bit of a journey, really. No doubt there's a lot of capacity for a lot of these climate solutions, and there's going to be a lot of pull and push with supply and demand. But the green economy is going to be absolutely major. Like, most jobs will be essentially servicing these climate solutions in the next few years. That's very exciting. So the technology product is built. It's about being relevant and being able to talk to those who are on the fence, who are maybe quite cynical or who just don't care enough, or embedding this into their lives in a way that is not like, it's a very low friction way. So that is it, really. It's essentially a marketing problem. And that's, you know, with some of my background, very tech enthusiastic about environmental science for a long period of time. And then you're at this kind of marketing problem all of a sudden. And so that involves just completely different sets and kind of human psychology. And so, yeah, it's really in that world. How do we be big enough? Like, how do we seem like a trustworthy opportunity? How do we get there fast enough? And like all the kind of stepping stones to getting to that point. And that's the journey, and that's the crucial problem. And so, yeah, I'm finding a lot of my time in adverts and getting myself on Google page one of, kind of SEO and kind of all the kind of classic hallmarks, all like the classic angles of kind of like a normal business trying to sell itself, really. But instead of needing 1,000 customers, we need like 700 million customers. And that's going to pose a problem. Also, our margin is so small that if someone starts to talk to us on customer support, or if a business does, that sort of time, it almost doesn't balance itself out. So we need a very kind of hands-off system where we kind of need that horizontal scalable system needs to be truly baked in from the outset, so that we can welcome those hundreds of millions on board. And the marketing for sure. Then in the short term, there's going to be getting access to all the right projects. There's a lot of projects out there, and a lot of them are quite small scale, so they'll come up and onto the market, so to speak, and they'll come off the market. And it's ability again for us to do this in like a really scalable manner. So I think that looks like a little mini marketplace for projects. So a project developer would say, I've got 10,000 tons or 1 million tons of CO2 that you can remove through coming through our project, and just put them onto our system. We look at how they're certified and where the due diligence and reporting is at, and then we plug that in. And if you're in Australia, then no doubt you'll be want to planting trees in Australia, not necessarily in Madagascar. And same for China, and if you're in Scotland. And so being able to keep impact local is a major win for us, because it's on the tips of everyone's kind of tongues what they want from kind of supporting the world. They know it's a big global problem, but their country is their home, really. Yeah, so there's a few aspects, and it's a great problem to have, and it's a good start. Like, we've got a brand that people really like, and it's affable. It's not like kind of the old age of environmental services. It's more kind of in the branded kind of lovely, more like Headspace than our environmental consultancy.
Yeah, I'm a user of Headspace as well. So yeah, I definitely feel it has a similar emotional connection. And it makes sense now to me, the features that you have in Offset Earth, which is the transparency, is the visibility. I do feel connected to the offsets that I've bought with you. I almost feel that the pictures you show me are the pictures of my actual trees. I know it's not quite there yet, but it does feel that kind of connection. I've always wanted to ask this question, actually, and I'm going to ask it to you, because you're involved in kind of the offset markets, the buying of offsets. You understand that the nature of that world. And you talked a little bit about how offsets can be bought at different prices. And as somebody I used to be in the financial industry, I know as demand increases, price increases, you use up or you buy up all of the cheaper offsets. And then all that's left is the more expensive ones, the more expensive ones, the more expensive ones. The price rises and rises and rises. How do you see this going on in the world? And also, does this give a good indication to the price of carbon? Put it that way, is that, yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big deal, and like, we have quite a close partnership with a carbon trader who's been doing it since pretty much the whole thing has kicked off, and has seen the kind of ebb and flow. And So with carbon pricing, we work very closely with a carbon offset expert, essentially, who's been working with this since carbon offsets came to fruition with the original Kyoto protocol in 97. I've had this kind of whistle stop tour of like the history and how it's come online and also really come off the boil. 2007 was a dark time, a lot of investigative journalism denouncing a lot of these projects are genuinely a sham. And since then, there's all these certifications which have improved things. And so now demand is rapidly increasing. Aviation is going to have to enforced to be offsetting. And so we're going to see real short-term spikes in that price. And to a certain extent, we already buffer in this idea of price fluctuation. So, for example, we did this just 2 or 3 weeks ago, where we have a little extra buffer of our kind of commitment. So when you sign up or a business signs up, then we make a minimum commitment of how many offsets we buy on your behalf and trees we plant on your behalf. But then we add a bit more just in case of the kind of price fluctuations, rather than us having to every single week change the kind of the price to the end user. And so over the last quarter, or the last 3 quarters, sorry, we've had quite a big gap, which has meant that we've been able to not just line the back of our line our back pockets with our own cash, essentially, and not issue a dividend, but we've been able to issue an impact dividend to all of our subscribers. So just the other week, we issued this tree dividend. So carbon offsets were cheaper than we'd expected. And so we issued out 350,000 trees to be planted, 115 each to all of our subscribers. And that was just our kind of way of giving back, but also as a way of us being able to kind of weather the storms of that kind of market price fluctuation. It's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a 20% year-on-year increase, just generally speaking, which is not as much as I was sort of fearing. But if it does happen, then we have to adapt to it, and we have to essentially start paying what a real price, what the price of a carbon ton is that necessitates it, essentially. I'm also seeing a lot of efficiencies happening at the moment. So, for example, protecting a tropical rainforest in the Amazon, for example, that used to be incredibly expensive. So you can sell these carbon offsets. If you protect the Amazon, then there's a whole lot less tons of CO2 entering the atmosphere through slash and burn, also animal agriculture entering these lands. So if you can protect the land cheaper, then these carbon offsets are going to come down as well. So there's an amazing technology company called Peshama who do a lot of monitoring through microsatellite technology and computer vision to build up these amazing near real-time kind of maps of carbon, not trees, but carbon in the ground. And that monitoring has alleviated a lot of the manual, essentially tree counting that these consultants, these NGOs were otherwise having to do. So there's a lot of interesting, very low cost solutions coming on the market as well. So yeah, I'm just as keen as you are to see how it's going to play out. But no doubt, kind of the numbers are involved on the supply and demand side of things. It's just going to go through the absolute roof. And it's sure it's going to be interesting. And the solutions themselves are going to be more creative. What's going to be a bit difficult is the certifications are going to take a little while to adjust to some of these kind of new projects that are coming out here. So imagine like it's an infrastructure project that is 10 years, 20 years in the making. Certification is slow, there's a lot of paperwork for the right reasons. And so it may mean that in the short term, we might have to be more open to other types of, the gold standard is convenient because it's lauded as being amazing and solves a lot of these problems. We might have to bring some of that kind of certification aspect in-house, more due diligence. We have to bring in like bona fide climate scientists to do the work that Gold Standard were doing on our behalf. And so then there's more readily available projects that are out there. So,
and I suppose you could do it for cheaper as well.
Yes, yeah, yes, sort of. It's going to be a really brilliant thing for us to be a lot closer to the inner machinations of the projects that we're getting behind. That's going to be absolutely fantastic, this kind of awareness, and especially as we get involved with more kind of early stage kind of moonshot projects. Yeah, it's going to be brilliant, and it's going to pull us in lots of different directions. But the one thing, we just can't be afraid of getting behind the higher risk areas. Like, unfortunately, with climate, there's no certainty. It's impossible to say with any certainty that a ton of CO2 has been removed. And in the science world, that does great. And with a lot of our potential customers, that would potentially great as well. But we know that some things won't deliver to the absolute expectations. But if we have a real diverse portfolio of projects that we get behind at different stages and different levels, then that's the way we de-risk it. And that's how we kind of be able to serve hundreds of thousands and millions of people to become climate positive.
And that's great. I for one, don't mind my money going to offset Earth being used for more risky endeavors. And I think the less time we have, the greater risks we need to take to achieve our goals. And I think that's what the current times are demanding.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, yeah, couldn't say it better myself. It's pulling all the levers that we have access to right now.
Yeah.
As in just literally today, isn't it?
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about Offset Earth itself. Like, what stage are you at? How many people are involved? And where are you even based? Let's describe that to the audience.
Yeah, so based in Bristol, so in the UK, an ex-Londoner, and one of my co-founders is on a boat, on a houseboat, and the third co-founder is my wife, and we're currently sharing child-minding duties, and that has its own intricacies. So
the COVID child-minding duties.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
An hour ago, I was making a mud pie, and now I'm talking to you. So it's a real family life balance. My father-in-law is essentially our impact coordinator, who is essentially project managing all the accounting. It's a little bit of a family business. There's about 60 other people on our Slack kind of makers group, all kind of pitching into this. So we launched last year, so that's June 2009. We launched last year in June 2019, and yeah, so we've got 7,500 climate positive individuals and 500 climate positive workforces. And that's a really good start. And that's just a case of just adding more zeros onto the back of it. As I was saying earlier, it's a case of marketing is a big problem, and talking to a lot of project developers. That's a real keen passion of what my role is, finding just the exemplary projects that are out there. Just last week, we've secured investment, which is really a big deal. As I say, it's like a long journey for us to be able to pay a large team out of this with these small margins. But with investment, it means that we can triple our team, which has a big implication for what we're doing and the planet in terms of the opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, in the middle of COVID-19, being able to secure that deal, we feel very lucky. So lots of really good changes are afoot. And it's with being in the middle of COVID-19, it means that it's also kind of a bit of an eyes down, focus on the product. Our background is tech, and so therefore it's going to be, we can see a big opportunity for integrations, like, I don't know, for example, Zapier, that kind of way of integrating anything with everything. We want to be there and just make funding climate solutions like an absolute doddle that like many consumers may not even know about the climate offset, sorry, the Offset Earth platform or planting trees. That it's just a way of kind of connecting all these disparate systems. And so it's a bit of a engineer dream at the moment for the next few weeks, for sure.
Yeah, and as an engineer, I do love whenever companies like yourself make these services available via APIs or Zapier or IFTTT or whatever service you want to use. I will definitely think of 50 or 60 ideas for how to use that. So you mentioned about your background being engineering. Could you speak a little bit more? What is your background and the background of your partners as well? And what inspired you? What was the spark to start this endeavor in the first place?
Yeah, so I've for 15 odd years been a developer, web developer, full stack, and then became a CTO and a head of a product. At when I was working in London, there was this media company I was kind of leading in terms of the digital operations side. And it was good. My salary was being paid by ads. It was very, it was a very kind of media-y world I was living, and then always burning in the back of my head. It's like, oh my God, the freaking climate emergency is a whopper, and just needing to scratch the itch. And so I scratched it maybe about 2 years ago, and just been working on this essentially since. But I've always been like deeply concerned about the darn environment. It's one of my first kind of adult conversations that I recall with my mum, going, surely there's this kind of impending doom we're walking towards. And mum said, there's always been issues that we've always faced, and we've always got, every generation has talked about this being like some sort of issue to face. And so it's been a real thing to kind of need to get behind. And it's been great to marry the two, because I could see a real opportunity that June last year, there were no services to directly fund climate change solutions. Nothing kind of affable other than like a download certificate at the end of it. Affable as in kind of maybe engaging and like a real reason to do something. So that was the whole opportunity. And that was with me and my wife. You know, her background was kind of digital design, met through a previous job, and of the same sort of background and itch to scratch as well. And our daughter had just turned up on the scene maybe like a year before that, and she was an absolute little poppet, but also nightmare. And I just sorted out like an extra half day from my boss, just like 4.5 days a week, not 5 days a week, 4.5 days, me and the missus just go and, I don't know, go mountain biking, or I don't know, go for a walk, or just literally sit on the sofa. And we were just talking about the potential opportunity here. And then conversely, rather than giving ourselves more time off, we'd managed to fill that half day immediately, and then more, with ultimately doing two jobs at once. And it was basically a year ago that me and my wife just kind of went to this cafe and realized that this is where there was like floods of tears going, like, how the heck are we going to do these two jobs? Our own daughter is just so difficult, and going like, why are we doing this? And having been able to break through, and she grew up a little bit more, and like we were just able to kind of make it work and be able to go full time and start paying. And there's just a few planets aligned. A lot of that is about this idea of proper collaboration and people volunteering their time. And it meant that we could just keep on going that bit further. And it was very close, for sure. It was definitely quite close to just being one of these kind of little side hustles. When I say side hustle, it probably would have been just the world's worst side hustle as well, without any help.
Like the side hustle, which takes you four times longer than your day job.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had those side hustles. Oh, that's amazing. So I think you alluded to something there, which I talk about quite often, which is that, you know, this is hard. Like, what we do is hard, and trying to solve it is hard. It sounds like you've got some help there with the number of volunteers as well. But this is a tough problem that we're solving, and sometimes we get help, sometimes we don't, and it's hard sometimes to stay motivated. You've managed to stay motivated long enough to build a success out of this. What's your secret? How do you stay motivated every day, especially through the tough times?
It's the working with purpose, isn't it? It's the kind of that drive, and it's the, up until this point, the kind of the idea of eco anxiety definitely resonated with me. And it's that when you're not engaged, when you're not being able to really contribute, is hard. And then you put yourself in a position where you feel like you're part of the solution, and everything that comes with it. And it's a big deal. And about a year ago, we were like, could we plant a million trees through this? And like, wow, can you imagine that'd be absolute success? And it just seemed so unrealistic, especially with the aforementioned toddler kicking around my ankles at the time. And now it's onward to the kind of the next kind of, I don't know, like a billion is now the thing to kind of aim for, and kind of, whoa, that is absolutely serious. And this idea that you're kind of just building this kind of legacy, and also the idea that it's our mission, really, isn't it? That's the thing that kind of gets you motivated. And that's the hard part for me is kind of in an ideal world, the last year we would have seen a lot more signups on our platform. We would have a few of those things that we tried maybe didn't work out. And on reflection, it was the right time to do the experimentation and kind of like what works and is this a right area to invest time. And, a year is actually on reflection, we've been, done quite a lot of things, and it can feel quite frustrating how slow things are moving. But then you kind of maybe take a little look back every now and again. It's like, ah, man, this is absolutely fantastic. And seeing where just kind of the positive vibes. And for example, on Twitter, every now and again, we've got this family plan where you sign up the parents and the kids and the pets even. And we had someone saying that their child, I've forgotten what age, I get the impression it's like 7 or 8, just every week asks like, Dad, can I see how our forest is getting on? And they kind of like gather around and tap on all the different trees. And it's just, that is just lovely. And I think the world needs a lot of inspiration and kind of to feel helpful rather than helpless. And I'm imagining a lot of our subscribers are starting to feel that much more helpful at the moment. And that's a freaking brilliant thing to have going on at the moment.
Yeah, as one of your subscribers, I can definitely say that I also click around my forest every now and again to see stuff. And I also remember getting the tree dividend. So thank you very much for that. You see that in your forest as a big clump of trees.
That's cool.
So just one last question. Is there something you've read recently, a person our listeners should follow, a thought you've had, an ask from an ask to our listeners that you want to share before we leave?
Yeah, so I've been really into natural climate solutions, really. That's my bag. And by that, that's reforestation, and then it's all sorts of kind of nerdy permutations of using peatland, which is this kind of heavy clay mud. And so, anyway, what comes with that is kind of the opportunity for ecological restoration and rewilding. And I've just been reading an amazing set of books. So if anyone's sort of interested, but wanted to kind of just be a bit more interested, there's two amazing books, The Hidden Life of Trees and Wilding, both a little separate. The Hidden Life of Trees is downright just jaw-droppingly incredible. The intricacies and peculiarities of trees and how they communicate, there's this idea of the wood wide web, where they actually can communicate through this kind of bacterial network where they send signals and all sorts of things. But it's a real page turner, even for kind of an absolute uninitiated. And with Wilding, there's this real love for kind of nature and this opportunity. It's just absolutely fantastic. And it's just become a bit of a hobby. So if anyone's after a new hobby to kind of get behind and a real page turner, it's that kind of theme. And then similarly, we've just partnered with a very early stage project here in the southwest of the UK called CoForest, and it's coforest.co.uk. And in coming up this year, so around November, December 2020, they're going to be planting their first trees. And it's just the idea that we can co-create new forests, and Office of Earth will be supporting it. But what they have is this kind of amazing blueprint for. It's essentially all open source model of acquiring land. So that's all the kind of the legals, the contracts, and the kind of the ecological point of view is important. And essentially just creating kind of almost
like a forest in a box, sounds like. You get everything you need to create your own forest.
Yeah, absolutely. What's Bitcoin, where it's kind of destructured, or Git? where it's D.
So it's distributed.
Yeah, distributed? Exactly. All right, so I talk about CoForest again. Yeah, and similarly, there's this amazing forest project called CoForest that's just happening in the southwest of the UK. And we're really enthusiastic about this as well, because what they're doing is they're not just helping plant a lot of trees in different areas, but they're essentially kind of white labeling it, creating this kind of distributed model for anyone to essentially get hold of land, which is often bad land, which you can't essentially do much with. It's on degraded land, which is no good for farming. So if you're in an area very, maybe quite rural or not, and you just want to essentially get behind and access these grants, you can have all sorts of support, but you can be responsible for your own little forest in this whatever corner of the world you're getting involved with. It's really exciting. It's a pilot program. What's amazing about it is they always have these little visitor centers with each of these little co-forests. And then you can just go and visit it. It's a bit like $1 million homepage where every pixel was essentially funded. Where
I remember that.
Yeah. So you fund a square pixel. Well, a pixel a square. You fund a square meter, and that's essentially visualized. And so when you're down there, you can go and see your bit of land that you've actually funded and have a picnic. I don't know. It's a real connection with essentially restoring the land. And in 50 years and 100 years, maybe you can go waddle down to it and go see how it's getting on. Might have been cut down, but maybe the other one next to it might be blooming and all sorts of things. And it's just a wonderful project to get behind. So yeah, that's CoForest. Very excited about that one too.
And that's amazing. I'll put the books and CoForest in the show notes. CoForest does sound very interesting. I love the idea of popping up forests, and it sounds very open source as well, like popping up forests all over the world, all over the country, at least in the UK.
Yeah, pop-up forest is really nice. Forest. Nice idea. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way of calling it.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Elliot, for this conversation and spending the time with us today. It's been a fascinating journey to find all the things that Offset Earth are doing. And I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing as well.
Thank you very much. Oh, it's been a real pleasure to talk this through for the last half an hour.
You've been listening to Asim Hussain on The Climate Fix. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe on your favourite podcast application. It really does help. Information about this episode, including all the links that we mentioned, can be found on our website, theclimatefix.com. If you want to message me, you can find me on Twitter as Jawache, or you can email me at hello@theclimatefix.com. If you want each new episode neatly packaged together with the show notes and sent to your inbox weekly, then subscribe to our newsletter, which you can again find on theclimatefix.com. Till next time.